All right. Hey, everybody. We are back on Writer Stuff. I am John Stamp. With me is Jeff Circle. Welcome, sir.
Here I am. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. And joining us tonight is Greg Podolsky, writer of The Recruit and the Rick Carter series. So, Greg, thank you for coming on and joining us.
Thank you for having me, man. I'm looking forward to this one. It's going to be fun.
Absolutely. First off, we were talking a little bit earlier, but when I was looking through, I noticed you're a very brave man. I say that because you've got when I was going through your website, I found the short story, The Horse That Raised by Wolves. You wrote at 7 years old. You got that thing your early writings.
Yep.
Like that's
Pulitzer Committee completely ignored it. I didn't get it even a thought, not even one honorable mention, but you know.
Jerks.
I think it might have been a child labor thing. I don't know if they
potato John.
Exactly. No, that's just that's funny because I remember in sixth grade I failed math class because I hand wrote like 50 pages of the god awfulest worst like alien abduction story ever. But you know, nowadays maybe it you know could end up being true. Who knows?
UAPs, hey, man, you never know.
But no, I appreciate you coming on. The Recruiter, I started it. I'm a few chapters in, and the first couple chapters, I'm just like, this guy you either want to like hang out with him and be like, this dude's hilarious. We need to go to the bar and do some more shots of Macallan, or you want to punch him. Like, there's two options. So, like, let's just start talking about Rick.
So that actually mirrors a review. One of my earlier reviews that I got was you alternate between wanting to buy him a beer and punch him in the face. And that was very intentional. I wanted to make him a character that was basically a throwaway villain in any other thriller, right? So in another thriller, Jack Reacher finds Rick Carter halfway through the story and beats him up to get information about whoever hired Rick, who's the main bad guy of the story. And then Rick is never seen again unless it's for one other scene where the main bad guy brings him in and kills him, right? Like, that's it. That's the only time you get the guy. He's the connector piece. And I wanted to center an entire story around that character and make him somebody that the audience would root for. And I also wanted to make him a villain who was a bad guy and he still wanted to be a good guy. He came from a very normal background. My agent calls him the HR action hero, which I think is fantastic. I love that because he really had a very boring life like I do now up until 10 years before the book starts when he gets into this life where he's basically recruiting criminals for other criminals. And he gets into it not because of circumstances beyond his control, which you often see when it's an anti-hero. Usually there's something that has put them in that situation. In this case, it was just a series of very bad choices. And I feel like that was way more relatable, that we've all been there and we've all been in dire situations. And you make one bad choice and it snowballs. And next thing you know, a decade later, you're stuck in a situation you don't want to be in. His is obviously very exaggerated just to make it more fun. But I felt that that was something that more people can relate with. And then, the universe conspired against this guy. And now he's quote unquote a villain. I didn't want to do that.
Yeah. He's like, he's the montage guy. Like somebody says in a really cool voice, I'm putting together a team and he gets 30 seconds to show you all these cool people.
He's Kelsey Grammer in The Expendables 3. Like if you've seen that movie, that was the first time I ever saw a character like this. And even that character was really kind of working for the good guys. Like Sly's team was a mercenary team. It was a good guy team. So, but that idea of, like, let's put together a team and then you play some rock music and then he's gone, you know, like I wanted to make him not be gone.
Yeah. Is that the one with, who's the MMA
it's the one you should like? Never, ever watch. It's that one.
But yeah, it was the young kids, right? It was the,
they tried to replace it. It was one with Ronda Rousey and they went PG-13 because that was a great idea. Like,
That was a fail.
That was a fail. Yeah. The first two were great. I haven't seen the fourth one. The first two were just dumb, fun action movies. And then the third one just kind of lost the train. But hey,
dumb fun action movies is like my Friday nights. Like,
oh yeah,
that's it. Like when everybody falls asleep, and I'm like I'm going through Amazon. I'm like, it's probably going to be between 85 and 92. And if it's got one star, probably taking a shot. Like
it's like the reverse algorithm for you.
Well,
speaking of a good one, though, have you guys seen Rebel Ridge on Netflix?
No. I've got it in my watch list. Absolutely. But that's the one right there. It's like, I can't, my wife will not watch this. She'll be like, you're an idiot. What are you doing? I'm like, no, it's gotta be like fantastic. 1 o'clock in the morning, Saturday.
It is a thinking man's first blood. It is. I cannot recommend this movie high enough. Absolutely. Check it out.
I think just called Rambo that. Dumb.
Well, what's Sly 70 something now? I can't beat him up, but I could probably outrun him. So, you know,
right before I came in here, I was watching Red. That's hilarious.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I remember that. Yes.
With Willis and Malkovich. And those.
Malkovich is just a riot in that. It's so fantastic. Love that dumb stuff. Here's the thing, Greg. First time I hit your website, you contacted me about being on the dossier, and I checked you out, and dumb stuff came. I'm like, okay, this stuff is funny. I mean, this guy's hilarious. People need to go to gregpodolsky.com and check out some of these reviews. I'm just going to read a few right here. Kirkus, you got a Kirkus review. This is fantastic. Yeah. They say, enough action, killing twists and betrayals for a whole season of quality TV. So, hey, let's sell those film rights and get some more Netflix stuff with your name on it. And Publishers Weekly said, Podolsky nails it on his first go-round, delivering a page-turner with sharp dialogue and a memorable protagonist. Here's hoping readers hear more from Rick Carter soon. And that's the thing, Rick Carter. So people, I think, are going to love this book because of Rick Carter, obviously, and the story, of course. But the thing about it that stood out to me was how Rick Carter's different than everybody else. Rick Carter isn't a Mitch Rapp. He's not a Jack Reacher. He's not a Rambo. He's a dude. But the thing that is the craziest is the humor. And what was it? One of the reviews, it's an Amazon review. People, you got to get out there and look this book up. It's called The Recruiter. Someone said, love the book. Philly, South Jersey area. I would say it's a thriller with comedy and sarcasm. And so you did a great job, and this is what I want to compliment you on, is mashing up the sarcasm and the sardonic humor and the satire with an action thriller. What made you decide to go that direction? Because like I said, there's all these Jack Reachers and Mitch Rapps and all these out there. Why did you make Rick Carter so different than all these other characters out there?
Well, thank you. And I got to take a second right now and thank you sincerely for everything that you have done to promote this book and to promote me. And it's not just me, it's other writers. You know, John and I were talking before you got on. You and the Writer's Dossier have just burst onto the scene. And I used a metaphor on Twitter to pay you a compliment. And I want to repeat it here for anybody who missed that basically authors are all on one gigantic stage trying to get the attention of a constantly distracted audience. And some authors are fortunate enough, and none of them really are born into it. A lot of the ones that are up front with a real loud bullhorn getting all the attention have earned their way there. I'm not trying to disparage them, but there's very few of them. And then the rest of us are all behind them, just waving our hands around, trying to get a few people to notice us. And it's not easy. 2,200 books were published the day that The Recruiter came out. And that's everything from a coloring book and Mad Libs to something from Simon and Schuster, right? Like it's not just the big ones, but yeah, if you count self-publishing, 2,200 books came out the same day as mine, and I've got to get noticed. And Jeff, you are a guy who was walking around that stage with a microphone and a spotlight, pointing out the little guys like me and saying, pay attention to him. And I cannot thank you enough for that. So sincerely, on behalf of all the other writers in the back of that stage, and even the ones up front that you're getting more and more on the dossier, really appreciate it, man.
You're welcome. No, man.
Cheers. Cheers to that.
I did it because of Rick Carter and you and your humor. So thank you. I appreciate that, Greg. Definitely. Thanks for all your support back, and John, yours too. So let's talk about Rick Carter.
So yeah, so we were on the subject of action movies, and one of my biggest influences is a screenwriter named Shane Black, who I'm sure you guys as children of the 80s and 90s know.
Maestro.
Lethal Weapon, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, The Nice Guys, Long Kiss Goodnight. You know, he is, in my mind, he is the best at combining not only action and comedy, but he has a very unique action where it's it's not bombastic, right? A Shane Black movie, by and large, is not a Michael Bay movie where it's crazy, over-the-top, gigantic stunts. His movies are not made for hundreds of millions of dollars. They're usually made on the cheap. And the action comes in kind of brief bursts, and the violence tends to be very gritty and sudden and real. But throughout the whole thing is this vein of just natural sarcastic humor that constantly gives you a release from that stuff. And I've always gravitated towards that. Before I started writing thrillers, I wrote a lot of like short humor essays and stuff. And so my natural voice has always been very comedic. And when I started to write a thriller, it just started to naturally come out that I was going to make this guy funny. And then it's a write what you know, right? So, you know, I'm a recruiter in my day job. I do not recruit criminals, at least, not knowingly. No, I've never had any issues, with that. And, but that's kind of a boring job. Like, I love it. I've been doing it for over 17 years, but it's a lot of calling people on the phone and staring at a computer, looking at resumes. And I didn't want to be the John Grisham of recruiters, right? I didn't want to write a story about a recruiter who's with a firm that's doing something shady and now he's stuck. I thought, how can I do that different? And then the Kelsey Grammer character kind of came to mind. And I thought, okay, what if there was a recruiter for criminals? That could be kind of cool. And so when I started to write the recruiter as a character, I knew he needed to know how to shoot a gun and how to hold his own in a fight, because if he didn't, he wouldn't last long in that world. But I also didn't want him to be Chuck Norris or Steven Seagal or Van Damme or any of those 80s action heroes. I wanted him to be more like an Indiana Jones, honestly, where Indiana Jones was sort of always trying to keep his head above water when the real stuff started going down. And that was always more relatable to me. And it was more interesting to watch a guy who didn't know how to handle himself in those situations than the guy who always knew what to do when he walked into every room. There's plenty of people who write that character and write them very well. I didn't think I had anything new to add to that formula. So I thought, well, let me mix it up a bit. And I found it was a hell of a lot of fun to do that.
Well, yeah, I'm looking through Shane Black here. Oh, yeah, you nailed it. I mean, like you said, the Lethal Weapons, even Predator, the Nice Guys, which was hilarious.
Nice Guys is a phenomenal movie.
Shane Black doesn't get a whole lot of credit for it. And I would not have noticed when I was 12 years old watching Predator. But his whole thing when he was in Predator up until he gets disemboweled, hung from a tree, he's the not funny guy that's hilarious. Like he's telling the worst freaking jokes ever
to try to get Billy to laugh.
Yeah, his whole thing is horrible jokes. And he took the heat off that really dark movie. And then after it moved on, it was just dark from the end. And then he disappeared. It was like, and I never put it together because I saw that movie when I was 12 and I just loved it. But then the new one, the other Predator with all the ensemble cast was slapstick the whole way through.
It's basically a comedy.
It was a great balance.
Yeah. It's not his best movie. I just watched that recently other day and it's a messy movie, but it definitely has, I mean, it's got his fingerprints all over it. But don't go to it if you want a true Predator movie. It's really right. It's kind of like a Funhouse version of Predator.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, Kirkus brought it up. What can you say about the option for this? I mean, the recruiters, you go through the Netflix list of what's going on up and there's nothing like this that needs to be up there. What would you have any news there?
So I am always limited as to what I can say, but I have been given permission to say that it has been optioned and there is something in development. But that is as far as I can go with it. So hopefully,
that's fantastic. That's great to hear. I hope it comes together.
Thank you, man. Me too. It'd be kind of cool. Yeah,
and especially on a platform like Netflix or Amazon that will let funny be funny. Like those are kind of the last bastions that will actually let funny stay funny and let you go kind of dark and sarcastic. Like Carter is. But I was wondering, how do you, I mean, there's a, like, I've seen it written where somebody tries to write a wise ass and it just turns you off. So how many rewrites did you have where you had him just going over the top and you had to dial him back, or you had to pump up the volume a little bit to find that balance of a likable character, but also with that element that sometimes you just want to punch him?
Well, I actually have to credit my agent because it wasn't as funny all the way through in the beginning. When I signed with Dan, Dan Miloszewski from UTA, he said, you know, if you come with me, I really want to make some changes to the third act. And I was like, that's perfectly fine. I know I didn't nail this the first time out. I'd be skeptical if you didn't want to make changes. And he said the biggest issue was in the third act of the book, the core group at that point becomes very isolated in a cabin up in the woods of Ohio. And it's very intense, and the kind of the walls are closing in. And he said, you lose the humor. And I said, I know, I just didn't feel like that situation called for it. And he goes, no, but the humor is what hooks people. Like, to Jeff's point, like, it's not, there's plenty of thrillers that have one-liners. Like, Don Bentley is very funny. I would never call any of his books comedic thrillers, right? They're thrillers that have some jokes in them. I wanted to go for that Shane Black tone where it's definitely still an action thriller. This is not, you know, a comedy, but there's more humor than you would normally find. But I just didn't feel like it fit there. And he goes, no, it needs to be all the way through. That's why people like this character. And so he basically gave me permission to just be funny. And he said, it's okay. And so that actually reworked some plot points, some story beats that worked serious. I couldn't really put the humor in there. I couldn't squeeze them in. So I had to rewrite the whole thing. So a lot of that is credit to him. And then as far as the voice itself, I mean, everybody who writes a book, a fiction novel, the first one's always autobiographical, right? It's just a matter of degree. So there's certainly things about Rick that I would like to think don't apply to me, but, the voice is very much me. So a lot of it is just, I've always had a knack for being able to say wise ass things and not get slapped for it. At 45, that streak is still going strong. Hopefully it continues for another 45, but so I think a lot of it was just me naturally kind of knowing, okay, what would I say in this situation, and what would the reaction be? And sometimes I do want them to get punched, you know, and so you do say something a little bit more over the top. But yeah, a lot of that just comes naturally from the way I think about things.
Nice. Okay. I'm going through my notes.
The fact that you prepared for this is way more than I did, by the way.
You're already three steps ahead of me, man.
Nobody but me. Handwriting is as garbage as mine, though.
Nobody but me could read these. If it ever came down to like OPSEC, I'm nailing it. I'm writing in code, and it's supposed to be English.
Bad handwriting is a sign of intelligence. My mom told me that when I was a kid. I don't know if she was lying, but I stick with it.
That's right. That and swearing. I say that all the time whenever I swear, and my wife does not buy that at all.
Oh no, it's true. Like, and anybody who says otherwise is full of shit.
Yeah, it's proven.
Look at it. For audio only, but what I wrote to him, it's amazing. You can even read it.
It's hard to do that when you're standing over a table. You can't write natural. Right? You can't make that look good. That's just not the way it works.
Greg just has his 8-year-old do all the book plates.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. It'll come out better that way.
Nice.
That's right. what do I have? I can't read my stuff. You guys, my question was, I think you touched on it a little bit. You said you always had like that comedic voice, just like you said, a little autobiographical coming out. And you said in your early writing, you got a couple novels that you ended up sitting on because you wrote them and you're like, not ready for publication. Yeah. I did not have that kind of discipline. how long when you decided on Rick, how long did it take you to solidify who he was as a character before you actually started writing? Did it take a long time for him to develop in your head and then you find a story for him, or?
Yes. Yeah. So the idea, I wanted to be a writer ever since that Highlight story came out. Right. And then when I went to college, I wanted to be in radio, and that was quickly dashed when I found out you got to really kind of be a nomad and travel around the country chasing jobs. And my wife and I were already engaged by that point. We got married young, and she's a Jersey girl through and through. And she's like, if you want to do that, I'm not coming with you. And I completely respected it because I didn't want to do that. So I got into sales, because when you have a degree in communications and journalism, you don't want to be a reporter. There's not a whole lot else you can do. So I got into sales and I kept writing, and it was always sort of like, sales was my day job, right? And I was going to be a novelist, and I just needed to get the one that got me there. And after my first novel got a little bit of bites with agents, but it never happened. The second one never went anywhere for good reason. Then I had a collection of short humor essays that I actually got an agent for, but I happened to know the guy, so it really wasn't like I had to query. And then he tried to get it in front of a couple. We got to one acquisitions meeting, and then we found out that you know, in order to have a nonfiction humor book, people have to know who you are in advance, and nobody knew who I was. So that died. And so at that point, I had gotten a job as a recruiter, And I kind of liked it. And I sort of, I had kids and I was like, well, maybe I just took a shot at writing and it didn't work. Maybe I'm one of those people, right? I can always say I wrote a few books. I had some things published in newspapers, you know, little letters to the editor things or whatever. And it was, and that'd be fine because I was really happy being a recruiter. And so for about 8 years, I didn't write anything. I just sort of took a break and I was being a dad and being a recruiter. But I had an idea one random night about a guy, like I said, a recruiter who recruited for criminals. And I wrote 10 pages. And then the next day I read them and I went, these don't suck. And I wrote 10 more the next night. And then the next day I wrote those and went, these don't suck either. But again, I had a kid in diapers. I had a job I liked. You know, the Eagles were probably playing well at that point. So I was busy, you know, part of the year. And it just sort of, they sat there. But Rick always sort of was in the back of my head. I'd be driving around a parking lot and I'd go, oh, what if this happened to him? That would be funny. Or what if, you know, so it's little just scenes, right? And then when COVID hit, we all had a lot more free time, especially a guy who gets paid to find jobs for other people when nobody's hiring anybody. So I said, well, if I'm ever going to do this writing thing and take one last shot, now's the time. So I dusted off those 20 pages and I wrote every day except for Sundays. And in 3 months, I had a first draft of about 80 something thousand words. And I let it sit. And when I went back to it, I realized that the first 70 pages or so of the book were basically an extended prologue info dump kind of thing. And so I cut that and it starts now where the book starts. And in doing that, I also realized that Rick was funnier, you know, then, because as the book went, he got funnier. Those first 70 pages, he was still kind of like the gritty, typical, like, private detective hero. And as I wrote, he got funnier. And I was like, all right, those 70 pages for a variety of reasons needed to go. So it was sort of a choppy journey for Rick, but he wouldn't be ignored. And a lot of your writers say that with characters, that they just kind of they refuse to be silenced. And he was definitely one of those.
Yeah, they just sit in your head until you can find a story for them, right?
Yep.
Yeah, yeah,
definitely.
And it that's interesting. Another thing that hit me exactly the way I see, especially the editing process, is on your website. You have I forget which. I think it's in the editor's blog post,
the Beyond Words blog.
Yeah, and you're that's a fantastic like path to publishing, like walkthrough for anybody who's trying to walk into it. It's like, here's a logical way of actually looking at trying to make a career instead of like writing something and throwing it on Amazon, see what happens. Right. Mm-hmm. You've got the quote that, if I could read, writing is like a novel is like a sculpture, like, right. Like you start with a giant chunk of wood and layer by layer, you just peel it back to finally find those words that were underneath. And I think me and Bishop were talking about that the other day. Just it's, and I never thought of that until this newest novel that I'm editing is like, oh my God, that first draft is such garbage. And it's like, I'm cutting more than I'm putting down. And it's like, but it's showing up. Right.
Yep.
But it's just such a good metaphor for that, the process itself. But, Beyond that, the Beyond Words blog. I did there? You guys like that? Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome. No, I just
rimshot sound effect. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, that one didn't. You can't land them all.
No, that was good. That worked. Don't second guess yourself. Don't put yourself down like that.
Exactly. I'll just take it. You miss 100% of the shots you don't take. No, that's right. I just that quote jumped out at me when you're talking about how I love the idea of walking through like going through a parking lot and just be like, how would Rick handle that, Karen over there? Like, you just slammed my car with her cart, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, and be like, and that's what the notes app on my phone was. It's filled with a line of dialogue or a needle drop or, you know, maybe a couple things of a scene. Like, that's how I write. I'm very much a hybrid planner. I don't write the full, you know, plot outline out. I know how the book ends. I know how it's going to begin. And then I have story beats that sort of come to me at random times. And I'm like, I really got to get to this. Like, there's a motorcycle chase in The Recruiter that I was dying to write. I had no idea how I was going to get there or what was going to happen afterwards, but I knew it was going to happen. And I knew Nothing's Going to Stop Us Now by Starship was going to be playing in the background. And I just had to make that scene work because it was too much fun not to. So the pantsing comes sort of in that connective tissue. And then the beats are what come randomly throughout the day. And then when I sit to write my thousand whatever words a day, that's what I'm doing. I'm connecting those dots until all of a sudden you get a manuscript.
Go ahead, Jeff. I
I was going to say, I love that because it really is a look into the process. There are probably a lot of people listening who are, you know, writers too, and they want to know, you know, am I doing this right? Because, you know, we all second guess ourselves. Sometimes, you know, things just don't come together. Sometimes we think they do, and then we come back after it marinates and it's crap. I think you said a couple really cool things. You know, the first 70 pages got to go. And once you hit your groove, then you just you keep rolling with that. And you know, I don't think a lot of writers' debuts are really their debuts, because John and I interviewed Bruce Borges, mm-hmm. that episode dropped today, and he wrote like two or three books, you know.
Yep.
John's written, you know, a half dozen books, and yeah, I've written a few. It takes that time. So if you know, people are out there and they're wondering, you know, how these debut authors are knocking out books, how on a day like when The Recruiter comes out, 2,200 books are published, why aren't they among them? Well, you know, it's part of the process, and you just gotta kind of do your own thing, trust yourself, and be willing to cut, like John said, and like you did, and then keep going from there. So I think that's fantastic. And I also wanted to bring up Beyond Words, because that was one of the things that really hit me when I discovered you last year about what it is you're doing. That's a really cool thing. And so, you know, thank you for, you know, sharing your knowledge about writing, the process and everything, and sharing your journey, because that's another thing that, you know, young writers or new writers, you know, can kind of figure out if they follow some of the good advice that you put out. So good job on that too.
I appreciate that. And that was definitely the idea was to give writers an idea of what goes into a traditionally published novel, because I do not have the patience or the business sense to go self-published. There's too much on your plate as a self-published author that I wanted no parts of. I was happy turning over whatever percentage of the royalties that I would otherwise get to keep to Blackstone, my publisher, to let them handle those things. But when you go traditional publishing, not only is it a longer process, but it's also, there's so many more people behind the scenes that most readers don't know are there. Most readers know editors, and that's probably about it. So I wanted to give credit to all those people that make all those books come out every year, every Tuesday. And that's what the Beyond Words thing really was just to sort of give them their due respect. So I appreciate you saying that. I hope a lot of people do find it. If there's anything on my website you're going to read that, and then watch the 10-second video of me taking a header when I'm 40 years old going down a hill on my bike during COVID, because that'll brighten your day no matter how bad it's been. So
Greg Podolsky, he won't let us down.
That's never. Bring a smile guarantee.
We're willing to bleed for you people. Yeah, right. I The marketing one alone, like when you read and you, like you said, all those people behind the scenes at Blackstone, the marketing girls, they're the hustle that they have to do to just stay ahead of that wave. I don't think people who don't come from the marketing background or have been in an industry where you have to advertise have any idea the scope. Like when you threw out that stat of 2,200 books are all published the same day yours was, there's no way to fathom. Mm-mm. How to divide up the amount of eyes that are going to hit that on Amazon or Barnes and Noble. And those two girls are the ones like under the pressure, like the editors. Okay. The editors got to come up with something good. You got to bring a good baseline. The editors got to make it snap. The artist has to make a cool cover, which your cover is, I think it's so classic. But if the marketing team is not running 100 miles an hour all the time, I don't know how they can like take a day off. Like, I don't know, like the vibe that you get when you talk to them, like what are they just Energizer bunnies or what?
Well, you know, the best thing about them is I know damn well I'm not the only author they work with, but I would never know that when I talk to them. Like when I communicate with them, I feel like I'm the only author that they're working with. And if they don't get back to me within a day, they apologize for it. And then I go into their office and I see what they're doing. And I know they're at Comic-Con or they're over in California for another convention, and they just never stop. And it's because there's a genuine love for books. I mean, they're hustling, but you know, the whole expression, right? If you do what you love, you never work a day in your life. That's, I think, every marketing department at a publisher that's successful, because you have to love what you're doing, or else the grind is just going to eat you up, and they're phenomenal.
Yeah, it's gotta be. I can't even imagine trying to just keep on top of all the different platforms and all the different avenues and all the different challenges these days, like just, I mean, only even like BookTok, Nobody saw Book Talk coming. And how? And yeah. You're a marketing manager at Blackstone, and somebody says Book Talk, and if you're the one that has no idea what's going on, it's like, yeah. How do you recover from
that? You know who knows Book Talk? And my daughter, who's 17 years old and doesn't know what Book Talk is, but knows what TikTok is. And so she is I appointed her my TikTok liaison. And
brilliant.
I thought, oh, I'll go on and I'll hold my book up and I'll talk about my book. And this is cool. Do you like Shane Black? So all the old people like me can think that it's cool. And then she'll go on and she'll do a 30-second video of her brushing her hair. And the book is in the background. And she's like, Dad, I got 1,000 likes. And everyone's asking about your book. I'm like, you never mentioned the book. And she's like, it's called A Day in the Life video. And that's what you do. You subtly suggest it. And I'm like, see, this is why I'm not on TikTok. Because I have no, I would never think to do that, to try to promote my book. But she did it and nailed it. So my daughter she's the TikTok person. I try to do my best on Instagram, Facebook, and X. But she's got TikTok on lockdown.
That would never even occur to me.
No.
And me brushing my hair would not sell. Well, there might be a niche for that. There'd be a niche someplace. There's got to be.
You never know, man. Try it. Your book sales might go through the roof the next day. You never know.
You know what? Just because you said that, I have posted all of probably 4 videos to TikTok. And tonight, or maybe next Tuesday when this drops, I am going to brush my hair for 30 seconds on TikTok.
What do you got to
lose?
I'll live stream it.
I'm gonna live stream it, and I'll have with my books like sitting right here.
Look at Jeff. Jeff is so embarrassed by us on our behalf. Jeff, I don't want to be a part of this episode. Can you cut me,
John?
This is the last episode of Writer Stuff.
I'm happy John's to have brought this little collaboration to an end.
That episode hits, and I know there's gonna be a contingent of Moldovan security guards to leave it just a ton of comments.
Oh yeah, I'm like I said, I'm going to be very big in Eastern Europe.
Stips is very nice. Just comb his hair; it's awesome.
Yep, you know, maybe I'll do it in a Moldovan accent. I can do accents.
Absolutely, I think it'd be fabulous.
The thing is, though, I know I've talked myself into that, but I can just imagine the Everest amount of shit I'm going to take at work for that.
And maybe you can get Ama Adair to narrate in her Russian accent. There you go.
We'll do a split.
Life is difficult in Bulgaria.
You know, with AI, you can probably get like an AI of Jeff Circle behind you holding the brush and doing the brushing. We could really embarrass him without him even
there
having
it is.
A partner.
We'll, you know? Yeah, that's what we'll do. We'll do the Deadpool
pretty.
Wolverine thing.
So pretty.
This went off the rails real quick.
Wow. Yeah, that's
all right. That's all I've got right there. We got
that's a way to wrap it up. That is a hell of a way to wrap it up.
I knew Greg wouldn't let us down.
No, exactly. Man, this was tons of fun. You guys are awesome. Thank you so much.
I appreciate you joining us, man. Yeah, absolutely. And your Twitter or sorry, X, IG and website.
So X is at Bits of Nonsense, because I created that way back when it just started as Twitter, and I thought it was cool because that's all X really is Bits of Nonsense. So I kept that handle. And then GregPodolsky.com is the website, and then you can find me on Instagram at Greg Podolsky.
Awesome. Well, I look forward to seeing Recruiter on Netflix, man, but I look forward to part 2 even more. So whenever you want to come back, you got an open invitation.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you, guys. Have a great night, man.
Hey, absolutely. Greg. All right. Good night, everybody.